Welcome back to the Broadway Block. On today's episode, we got a very special guest, former NHL referee, Tim Peel. How are you?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Love that you came on. Love that you moved to St. Louis and you're embracing the lifestyle over there. I got to ask, what was a better experience for you, scoring that goal for the Blues or watching the Blues win the Cup?
Definitely watching the Blues win the Cup. When that puck went in off of me that night, it was the year I always joke with Bortuzzo, because earlier in that year, so in early January or mid-December, him and Sanford got into a fight at practice. And everybody was just saying, this team is in shambles. They're fighting, you know, they're last in the league. They're fighting each other now. And I think it was, in fact, I'm positive, it was December 12th in St. Louis, and Bortuzzo shot the puck in. And I see it coming at me, and usually a defenseman will shoot it around the boards or at the net. He usually just doesn't shoot it, you know, to the right of the net. And I see it coming. I'm like, I can't jump. I can't duck because it's at my waist. So I let it hit me, and it hits me in the left hip, and I'm in the left corner of the boards. Somehow it flutters across the goal line and beats Luongo.
I still can't believe that it just got by Luongo.
Like, no, it was unbelievable. Right, it was unbelievable. And I fall backwards, and I hear the horn go off when the Blues score. This horn goes off, but I had my head down, and I was on my hands and knees, and one of the linesmen came over, and he goes, "You okay, Peelsy?" I go, yeah. I go, did that puck just go in the net? And he goes, yeah. And I go, oh, my God. So I leave the ice for a few minutes. I come back out. And Luongo is one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. And he's like, Peelsy, are you okay? I go, yeah, I'm good, Lou. I said, but guess what? I go, for the rest of my life, I'm going to be able to say I scored on Roberto Luongo. So the funny end of that story is, two nights later, I've got Florida in Chicago. And I think the backup at the time was Reimer. I think it was Reimer in Florida. And we're skating around, and Luongo comes right up to me. He goes, Timmy. So he wasn't starting. They were going to start the backup. He goes, Peelsy, he goes, they won't even start me now when you're roughing our games, because they're afraid you're going to score on me. So it was funny. It was a great story. So I joked with Bortuzzo. I go, that was the turning point of the season for you guys, when I scored. And what's crazy about it, Joe, is, like, you know, living here in St. Louis for so long and, you know, having so many friends and people here, ex-Blues players, and, you know, I'm heavily involved in the community. And I get home and I'm having a glass of wine, and my wife is like, you're unbelievable. She goes, you not only score a goal, I'm one of the first guys ever to do it as a ref, but you score it for the hometown Blues in the city that you live in. And my phone is just blowing up. It's one after another. And Gretzky sends me a text, and I show Tisha. I go, well, I finally arrived. I go, Wayne Gretzky sent me a text, and it said, we'll say Hulley had 775 goals. I forget his number. It was seven something. And Gretzky just says, you've only got 774 to catch Hulley now. So
you don't regret the puck hitting you at all, right? You got a great story.
It's part of hockey. You know, it's a good hockey story to tell, and
unbelievable, man. I mean, I guess that would be a real easy one, but would that be the highlight of your career? Is there a moment in your career that really sticks out to you?
No, working Stanley Cup playoffs, I was fortunate enough. I worked the bronze medal game in Russia in 2014. And those were highlights. This is just a funny, you know, funny story to tell. But, I was fortunate enough. I worked the Outdoor Winter Classic in Chicago at Wrigley. I'm a big baseball fan, so to be able to work at Wrigley. And then I worked the one here at Busch Stadium in St. Louis. And those are the highlights, and all-star games and that, when your family's able to come. And but this is just a good story to be able to tell some to, all the time.
You love to see those stories. And the Winter Classic, me and Steve, we met Rod Gilbert at the Winter Classic. I got on the phone with Steve like a week or two before, and I was like, hey, man, Rangers aren't going to get another outdoor game for a while. Like,
right.
We got to get to this one. And it was great. I was going to say it's at Shea Stadium, but it was at the Mets field. It was just incredible to be there. It was, what was it? Negative 10, negative 15 over there.
Yeah. That was the negative 7 day with like negative 20 wind chills or something like that. An unbelievable experience for sure. And like the arena just like kind of comes alive, and just to see like, you know, the whole place shaking, obviously is a Rangers game. So it's not a home event, being that it's not at MSG, but we were definitely the home team there for sure.
Where was the one this year? Because they did a tremendous job.
So the Winter Classic this year was in Boston.
Boston, yeah, that's right. Fenway Park, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. Just the pictures of it and the whole, it's just, it's beautiful. It's a great thing the NHL does, and I look forward to watching it every year.
100%. We're going to be at the MetLife Stadium Series. We're playing the Islanders, and the Devs are going to be playing the Flyers.
Very cool. That'll be great.
I wish it went like a round robin, and the winner of those two games to be like the Stadium
Series. But yeah, that would be fun. That'll be a great experience. So the fans will love that.
Yeah. Okay. And in New York City, like, you can't beat it.
No, the best.
No, it's an incredible way for the league to grow the game. And like, you know, we've seen the effort be there, you know, for sure. Like, I think they realize that it's not, you know, a kid's like first thought, you know, and especially it depends where you grow up. You know, what sparked that interest in you, Tim, to get into hockey?
So specifically to get into refereeing, I grew up in Canada on the East Coast, province of New Brunswick, by Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island. For people that don't know, on the East Coast of Canada, grew up in a small town of 1,500 people. Everybody played hockey, you know, started when I was 4, 5, 6 years old. And what happened, how I got into refereeing, is I was 13. And in the summertime, I used to caddy and clean clubs at the golf course. So when the wintertime rolled around, we didn't, you know, I grew up in a trailer park. I didn't come from any money. And so when the wintertime rolled around, I missed having the spending money. So I decided to ref the, you know, 8U, 6U's, and back then probably for, you know, $4 or $5 a game. And that's how I did it. And I did it up through college. And then when I started working, I got in the banking business. I started the company that I worked for in New Brunswick actually transferred me to Toronto. And that's when I got my big break, because I started working in the OHL as a referee. And just like, players, the NHL sends out scouts. You know, you guys would remember the name John D'Amico, Hall of Fame linesman, had a tremendous career. Him and Rob Schick and different guys would come out and watch junior games in Canada, whether it was the Western Hockey League, the OHL, or the Quebec League. And Dave Newell and different guys, and they just saw me working in, you know, different cities, Oshawa, Peterborough, wherever. And then I got put on the radar. So then they offered me a weekend job. You keep your full-time job. And I don't know if you guys remember, because you guys are young, but they used to have the old International Hockey League, the IHL. And so I would go away on weekends and work the IHL, and they would monitor and watch my games and in those cities. And then I was just fortunate enough in 1998, I was walking down Yonge Street in Toronto, and the phone rang on a Friday afternoon, and Brian Lewis offered me a contract, and he said, I know you've got a good job at the bank. If you want to take the weekend to think about it, give me a call Monday. And I said, no, I said, I'll be resigning Monday from the bank. And that's how it all took place. It was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. What is your favorite NHL memory? Like, is it a player? Is it a place you were at? Is it a specific game or a play or a call?
Well, one of my favorite games. So at the end of your career, you get to pick 3 or 4 different cities. And Montreal was going to be one. Philly was going to be one. St. Louis was going to be my last game. But Madison Square Garden was going to be one of them. Was going to be my second last one, was MSG. And Joe, I don't know if you remember, but I think it's going back a ways. I think it was 2014 or 17. It was the last time the Rangers and Flyers have met in the playoffs, and it went 7 games. So to get picked for a 7th game is a huge compliment. You, it's not even about the bonus money you get in the playoffs. When you get picked for a game 7, that means that's who the coaches want. That's who the bosses want. So Chris Rooney and I got picked to work this game seven in Madison Square Garden. And I remember before the game, we're in the dressing room, and it was an hour and a half before the game, and they were just chanting. They're already chanting, "Let's go Rangers, let's go Rangers." And it gives me chills right now even talking about it. And you come out of that tunnel, you know, as a kid that grew up in a trailer park of 1,500 people, and now I'm working at, in one of the greatest venues in the world. And so it's memories like that that I really cherish. It's it was a lot of fun. And Zach Rinaldo and I DM'd each other months and months ago, and we were talking about different things. And he brought up that game because he was playing for Philly. And Chris Rooney and I, we assessed one penalty the entire game. We let them play. It was kind of before you had to call everything. And we let them play, and we called Zach for an interference penalty in front of the Philly bench. He just blew up somebody that didn't have the puck. And he goes, "Oh, no, I remember that penalty." And so stories like that, memories like that, that you enjoy to talk about.
Well, I think that's so cool, like that the NHL gives everybody their own fan experience. Like for you, you were at MSG. I still can remember that 2014 series, which bar I was at in my early 20s, whenever following that game, staying up, what I did after. And I'm sure, Steve, that 2014 Flyer series, you remember where you were. And that's the best part about hockey, that brings people together, and kids, parents, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, win or lose, I'd always throw two or three pucks in my bag. And win or lose for the Rangers, I'd always throw two or three pucks in my bag. And we come down the ramp there where the team bus is, and we walk out, and there'd always be fans and kids waiting there, parents and kids. And you know, 99.9% of the time, everyone was like, "Hey, Mr. Peel, hey, Peel," you know. Once in a while, a guy would say, "You suck," but I can't even remember that happening, to be very honest. But I'd always reach in my puck or in my ref bag, and I'd give two or three pucks to the kids that were standing there. And it was like the joy in their faces just getting a puck that had New York Rangers on it. It was things like that that I remember that I loved doing. Oh. And it's not just me, all of our guys. If you're at a game, you'll see a linesman to flip a puck over to a kid. And yeah, it's a fan experience for everybody.
100%, man. I think that's what being a fan is. It's like you have a small little moment that just sparks a flame that lasts forever and makes you, you know, just such a fan of the sport. And then what a cool, like, phone call to get, going back to your conversation about, you know, getting the call. I mean, that must have been a surreal feeling, and like, you know, in the moment, just like, nah, I'm not gonna wait to make this decision, because things like that only come around, you know, once a lifetime. So
because the guy that called me, Brian Lewis, he happened to be at one of my games like a year before when I was trying to get there, and I screwed up a call. I was in the IHL in Detroit with the Vipers, and he came in after and took me outside the room away from the local linesman. And I'll never forget, he looked right at me and he says, "Maybe you're not as good as you think you are." And he did a 180 and he walked away. And that day that night after the game, I was driving back to Toronto, 4-hour drive to go work at the bank the next day, get in at two, three, four in the morning, and get up and go to work. And I remember the whole drive back thinking, you know, I'm done. I'm never going to get hired. But you just kind of keep grinding, and then somebody likes you and you're in the right place at the right time. Because there were other guys that I worked with that were probably better referees, but you know, guys were cut back then if, you know, they didn't take their conditioning serious. They got cut because they dressed like, you know, they didn't represent the NHL. You know, they didn't look the part, they didn't act the part. There's a lot more to it than just going on the ice and calling penalties. It's about being professional and looking professional. So there were better guys than me, but I was just in the right place at the right time.
Well, you seem like you have, I mean, not only a razor sharp memory of those specific moments, because they seem, you know, so integral years and years later to your career and your success, but, you know, it speaks to, you know, the drive that you had to be better at what you're doing. And I think that's a message that transcends just hockey. And that's beautiful, man.
Well, thanks. Yeah, no, I, you know, I was adopted. I grew up in or lived in an orphanage until I was adopted by the family that we moved to the East Coast of Canada in the trailer park. And I had never come from anything. You know, you guys know the ups and downs of my career and so on. And, you know, the message that I try to tell, you know, my kids and other kids, I try to give back a lot in St. Louis, and I coach a local team here that my son plays on and help out with some others. And it's just always about resiliency and perseverance. And not, you know, you're going to get, you know, I told these high school kids last year, I said, you're going to get kicked in the nuts a lot over your career or over your lifetime. And I said, life's probably pretty good now. You got a car, you got a girlfriend in high school. But I said, it's not going to always be like this. And you're going to have ups and downs, and nobody cares. No one's going to feel sorry for you. And it's really about how you come out on the other side.
Well, that brings me to my point. One thing I was disappointed was to see how your career came so abruptly on something that could happen to anybody. You know, you just slip of a mic, or, you know, you say something wrong. And, you know, that's where I respect you as a man, because I looked up information and I saw that you went around and you owned what you did, and you were like, hey, it was a common mistake. And I watch 82 games of hockey. I make my wife watch 82 games of hockey at night. She's not a fan, but I can see the vantage point where Arvidsson, like, you could see that there's no, like, it could have happened to anybody, that it looked like he just ran right into the goalie. Like, you know, so, like,
yeah, I just used the wrong verbiage. And trust me, we have said many things that have been wrong over the years in the NHL, whether it be a player say something or a referee. And, you know, I always say, like, if somebody was microphoned and taped at their job every day over their 20, 25 year career, they're going to have something that comes out the wrong way. And this just came out the wrong way. But I understand Mr. Bettman and Bill Daly's stance on it. You know, we had just brought gambling partners into the NHL. I was retiring literally 4 weeks to the day that happened, March 24th, and I was retiring April 24th. And it was just, hey, you know what, happy early retirement. And I met with Gary and Bill 6 months ago when I flew to New York and had a meeting about some things. Everything I would, a lot of people for whatever reason leave this business. When I say a lot of people, some people, officials, leave this business bitter. I'm sure some players do. They think they can get another year or 2 years. And other referees that have left the business, you know, they felt they got forced out too early, or they didn't work as many playoff games as they thought. But I had worked, you know, I had turned 55 that spring that I retired. So, you know, I had worked 23 years. I was ready to retire. You know, the game was just so fast now. You get to your early to mid 50s and these kids are 19, 20, 21. It's about reading the play, anticipating where they're going to go, because you don't have the foot speed to keep up to them. It's just unrealistic. And so I was ready to retire. Ideally obviously worked out a little different. Yes. Because the toughest part was flying home. And, you know, my kids came home from school and I met them in the driveway and got on, you know, my knee, and because they're, you know, back then that was 2 years ago. So they were 8 and 6, and I had to tell them that, you know, you weren't going to see Dad's last final game down at that Enterprise Center. And obviously there were a lot of tears, but the support that I had from, you know, Wayne Gretzky, Lou Lamoriello, Brian Burke, coaches, Tortorella, so I could go on and on. I'm going to miss a bunch of them, but the phone calls and the text messages from players. I'll tell you a quick story, and this is my favorite. Didn't make me feel good, but I really appreciated it. It was David Clarkson, who played for the Devils, played for Toronto, played for Columbus. He hated referees. And him and I were just like oil and water. We just did not get along at all. And he didn't get along with any refs. So So I'm driving home and I see this Columbus number. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. And I see this Columbus number and I answer the phone and he goes, "Hey, Tim, it's David Clarkson." And a bit of me for a second thought, is he going to say, "It looks good on you. You know, I'm happy that, you know." And he goes, "I just want to let you know, I live in Colorado now. I'm skating with some alumni this morning. And we all think it's a travesty how things ended for you. And I just want you to know that when I would see your name up on the wall," I says, "myself and my teammates before the game, we knew we had one of the best referees, but we knew we had one of the most fairest referees." And he goes, "I always respected you, even though it probably didn't come across that way." So that really meant a lot to me because he went out of his way to get my number through somebody. I think he got it from Marty Brodeur because him and Marty played together and were very good friends. And Marty lives here in St. Louis and golfed together once in a while with him. But for him, for an ex-player that I didn't even think liked me to go to that effort and call me, it meant a tremendous amount. And him and I had a beer a year ago. He was in town for a hockey tournament with his team and we just laughed about it. And it's funny how the hockey community is such a tight-knit group and you never want to be liked in this business, because if you're liked, you're probably not a good ref, because sometimes you've got to be a bit of a, you know what, because you just can't let people walk all over you, because players will do anything to gain an advantage, as will the coaches. So you don't necessarily want to be liked. You just want to be respected.
Couldn't agree more. Maybe to go back on that moment, is that we want to call one because we want to nip it in the butt? Like, do we want to?
No, I just used the wrong thing. What happened was is that I honestly thought Arvidsson got tripped. Kelly Sutherland and I called 4 penalties the entire game. 3 were to Nashville. 1 was to Detroit. And Kelly Sutherland, the other ref, is somebody I respect a lot. He's working the finals here right now. He's worked 8 or 10 Stanley Cup finals. And I was more embarrassed when I came over because I had called the penalty right in front of him. I was in the neutral zone by the Nashville bench. Kelly was standing right there. I should have just given him the call. I didn't need to step in. I should have trusted his judgment. So I just said the wrong thing. It just came out wrong because as I was going to the penalty box, I saw the replay and I'm like, geez, he didn't trip him. And so it was kind of my way of, I guess, saving face with my partner saying what I did, instead of me just saying, yeah, that was a bad call. I never should have made it. So
if you don't mind me asking too, when you look at the way that the playoffs are called now, it's like, you know, it seems like there's moments where they do let them play. And, you know, there are things that you could argue would be a call and, you know, kind of goes by. And then there's moments, you know, from a fan's perspective, that there's moments where the calls are almost intentional, that, like, you know, let's get this done with and let's play a clean game. You know, what goes into the mindset from a referee's perspective, being that we kind of only see it from that lens of.
No, that's a good question, Steve. I think to specifically talk about, you know, Florida fans were up in arms the first 2 games that all these penalties were getting called against Florida.
Yep.
Well, if you look at the game sheet, most of them were called when the score was out of line and Florida was trying to bring Vegas down to their level, into the gutters, you know, scrap it out, cross check and rough and so on. But the referees have a mandate. The referees are only going to get involved if players put them in a position where they have to make the call. And these guys are mandated right from Gary Bettman. Do not let the standard slip in the playoffs. That standard that we had in November, December, January, February. Now, is it called 100% the same? No, it's not. Okay. It's just not. It's more physical in the playoffs. It's more intense. We have more scrums. But the players and the coaches and the GMs, they're fine with that. They go, no, that's how we want the game officiated right now. We don't want every ticky-tack penalty being called in the Stanley Cup Finals. That's no fun to watch. But when you have, you know, I think it was game 1 or whatever, it was the first penalty of the game, and Lombard just cross-checked somebody in front of the bench, and I think they scored in the power play. Those are the calls that they need. You know, do they make mistakes? Chandler Stephenson in game 3 before they went into overtime, he drew a penalty to put Florida down with like 30 seconds to go in the game, but his skates just clipped with, but it's such a fast sport. And unfortunately, the refs only have the opportunity to call the game in real time. They don't have the opportunity to sit there on the sofa and watch the replay two or three times. And, you know, overall, I think they do a great job. The guys that are working the finals now are all guys that have reffed in the Stanley Cup finals before. Same with the linesmen. They all have a tremendous amount of experience. But are they going to be perfect? Not a chance. The game is never going to be called perfect. And I hear people say, you know, we need somebody in the stands. Like, the good thing about sports is players make mistakes. The officials make mistakes. It makes for good theater. It makes, like, we can't dumb it down so much that we have, because you're just never going to have a perfect game. It's not possible. Is it maybe possible in baseball where you have a strike zone? But hockey's different than other sports. You know, it's all in the eye of the beholder, like you say, from a fan's perspective. So, you know, I'm listening to NHL radio driving around today, and the Vegas fans think that the refs are doing a great job, and the Florida fans think the refs are doing a crappy job. So,
you know, doesn't matter. Florida gets a penalty anyway. They can't do anything with it.
Well, that's a
so yeah. That's,
man, if my team was up 3-1 in the finals, I'd say the refs are doing a fantastic job.
Exactly.
Question. So we saw some Trouba hits this year. Us as Rangers fans, we loved them. But, you know, obviously you've dealt with social media. We put these Trouba clips up and people are like, that's a dirty hit. Did you see some of these Trouba hits this year and think any of them were dirty?
I saw them all, Joe, and I liked every one of them. You know, there's not, we cannot take the physicality out of this game. We saw the play with Tkachuk and Eichel a couple nights ago. Eichel blew a tire and lunged forward. Do we want to take the old, you know, Matt Cook headshots away? Rafi Torres that used to, you know, do it. You know, I called a penalty against him in preseason going back a long time ago when the league, Stefan Quintal was the George Perros now, and they suspended Rafi for 40 games, and he never forgave me for that. But we need to take the headshots out of the game, but we cannot take the physicality out of the game. I do not want to go, you know, I joked with my son a couple of months ago, and you know, he's 10 years old, and they're not hitting, but they can still get in there and dig and be physical in the corner and grind. And I said to Bronson, I said, if I had strapped a carton of eggs under your pants today, I said, there would not be one of them that would be broken right now. I go, and we cannot, that's what we all love about this sport. We love the speed. We love the passion. We love the hard hits. But we needed to get rid of the headshots. And I think the league's done a really good job with that. And Trouba's the best at it right now. He's the best guy at it on how to time it. And every one of them, he's leading with his shoulder. He's got his arm down. They're not a dirty hit.
I think people say because he's a little bit taller too, so that sometimes that, like, he's coming down to someone smaller on the ice. Like Timo Meier, I think, was a little bit shorter in that playoff one, and he wrecked him. So, but like, it doesn't look like he's ever trying to do dirty hits.
No.
I just don't understand. If you know Jacob Trouba's on the ice and you're just skating the puck in with your head down, what do you...
You just answered the question exactly. Like, that's the problem now though, Joe, is that there isn't as many of those open ice hits anymore. So the players, they don't have that anxiety of going down the middle and keeping their head up because they're not used to, you know, what have we got in our league right now? Maybe one or two Jacob Troubas, not many of them. And so you're absolutely right. Keep your head up. It's hockey. You know, and I'll give Timo Meier credit. Timo shook his hand after the game, and he said in the press, I got to keep my head up. So most of them recognize that.
I mean, no disrespect to Meier. I mean, that dude is a absolute tank, and it just goes to show you the anticipation from Trouba, because, I mean, no one really puts themselves in those positions to make those plays. You're right. There's probably a handful in the league at the moment. But, you know, whenever there's a good play on the ice, what's the first thing the announcer comments about is head up all the way from either the, you know, making the play or finishing the play. And that's really what it comes down to.
One thing that does bother me, it bothers me that every big hit he throws now, he's got to fight.
I was going to ask you, what can the league do about that? Like, he sends it and then it's like three people are on top of him full on.
I hate it. There's not much the league can do. What the referees can do is enforce the instigator rule. And if somebody comes in and fights him after that hit, it'd be very easy just to give two for instigator, five for fight, and a 10-minute misconduct. The guy's sitting for 17 minutes. I think if our officials maybe did that more often, it would deter, because nobody wants to sit for 17 minutes. So, it's not just true, but it's other players in the league. If they lay a big hit, now they feel like they've got a fight after. And I don't know how we kind of got to that point in our game right now, because it never used to be that way. But that's one aspect that I don't like.
And it just seems like it happens every time, even with not as big as collision as with
Triple.
And then here's my problem with it is then people are going to be like, oh, because of this big physical hit, more people are getting in fights. So then the league's going to be like, oh, or somebody's going to say something. And next thing you know, like, it's going to be like the NFL, like all over again.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. So hopefully we kind of get rid of that over the next little while. We'll see. Everything's cyclical in this league. Everything, you know, every year we've got to fine tune a rule. A few years back, Sidney Crosby, not on purpose, but he slashed Mark Methot from Ottawa, and Mark's finger was kind of hanging off, and it was late in the year, and maybe our officials, not on purpose, because but sometimes rules just erode organically. And that summer, the GMs and Stephen Walken and the Players Association said, you know what, we need to clamp down on slashing. So we clamped down on slashing a couple of years ago. Hey, we need to clamp down. I don't know if you guys remember in the playoffs, Mayfield cross-checked Kucherov. Tampa and the Islanders were playing, and Hatton was down the corner, and I think he broke a rib, and it wasn't called. So that summer, hey, we need to reassess all of our penalties and which ones do we feel are eroding a little bit. And then that fall, when we came back, we clamped down on cross-checking, and we were able to clean it up in a few weeks, let alone a month. So
we see, like, more recently the effect that, you know, they've really tightened up on, like, defenders cross-checking the big man in front. And then, you know, you have Kreider rebound off of that year into a 52 goal season, because he's just impossible to move in front of the net.
Exactly.
I mean, there is always that, like, cascade of, you know, if this should happen, then this would happen. And we spoke earlier a little bit about, you know, the refs have the, I guess, disadvantage of seeing it only one time, and they don't have the replay to defer to. Is there a rule that you would, you know, change, hypothetically speaking, about the game? Because I feel like there are some calls at the moment that, you know, it seems really difficult to get right. And, you know, to name a few, maybe the delay of game when something rebounds off the glass, or maybe a high stick, and, you know, what really is goaltender interference, and those gray area rules. Is there anything that stands out in your head that way, Tim?
I think it's a great question. Somebody said something about the other day about changing rules, and I said, we need to quit tinkering with our game. Our game is in a really good place. I like the fact, because a headshot, you guys, you know, watch a lot of hockey. A headshot happens so quick. You guys see, you know, you see that Trouba hit. Did he get him in the head? Did he not get him in the head? Did he get him in the shoulder first? Then it rode up. It's really tough to see that at full speed. So I really liked, because before we call a match penalty for a headshot, and we had to live with the call, and the players and the coaches and the TV people are all looking at it going, he didn't get him in the head. And you would feel like you would want to crawl into a hole at MSG or whatever building. And you would hope that team would kill off that 5-minute major. It was a bad feeling you had in your stomach. So now they're able to look at those same thing. You know, for years, if you high-sticked Joe and you guys were teammates, but I thought it was the other team that got him, but it was his own guy's stick, and I called a double minor, same thing. They're looking at it going, it was his own player's stick. It was a terrible feeling. Now we're able to review that. They review goals for goalie interference. I think you kind of brought up a good point, because I'm not sure their thinking, because I haven't talked to Coley and Steven in a while, is that puck over the glass. It is such a difficult, you know, you and I, we all watch games. Did it tip the glass? Did it not tip the glass? Did it tip a stick before it went out? Is that why it went up high? So we don't want to review. We can't review everything. We can't review every hook, every trip, every slash. The penalties that I think really impact the game, like match penalties, major penalties, double minors, goalie interference, those are ones that we can review. But I wouldn't mind just to let the guys off the hook on the puck over the glass, because I watch a game and the announcers go, oh, they got it wrong, the puck didn't hit the glass, or it did hit the glass, whichever. So maybe we add one more, but I don't want us to start adding too much where we're reviewing everything.
Right. Well, it took a HD camera, four different looks at different angles with a slow motion to determine that it barely deflected off some guy's helmet before it went over the net. So yeah,
correct.
I completely agree. I think that one, results in a 2 minute. So it's like, it's not too egregious. You know, we have seen, I think, power play scoring become more of a weapon in recent years, especially with the caliber of players that are on the ice nowadays. But I do agree. I think that the goalie interference, that, something that directly involves in a goal, I mean, that's always tough, right? Because how many games can be decided by just a goal?
With that puck out of the glass, if that happens in the first 5 minutes of the game, it's a 3-2 game late. No one's really talking about that in the first period. But if that happens with 2 minutes to go or a minute and a half to go and they get the call wrong on a puck over the glass, That's when it becomes a bigger issue. That's when everybody gets upset, and especially the team that loses and their fan base. So I see why people get upset about it, because it is something that we probably could review fairly quickly.
So Tim, my last question for you is, what's your next adventure? Is there anything like we should be looking out for, a book or something?
I don't know. I thought about it. I thought about podcasts or writing a book. And the only problem with writing a book is, if you're going to make it really a good book, it's got to be a little
juicy. You're going to have to give up some stories.
I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if that's me. I just want to live a quiet life with my family and worry about them. And maybe I do a podcast. I've talked to a few people about it. But you guys know it's a lot of work to do a podcast. So we'll see what happens. I'm open to anything, but right now I'm just happy coaching my son and taking my daughter to horseback riding and playing golf and enjoying life.
I heard you got a dog back there. I heard him barking. You got a good NHL name for the pup?
No, it wasn't a dog. I think it was just my kids making noises.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Mine are upstairs. I hear them trampling upstairs.
If you don't do a podcast of your own, you're always welcome back to chat with you. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, boys. And I appreciate it.
And thank you so much for taking the time with us. I, as humble as you are, you got to give yourself some credit. You got some amazing stories that I'm sure some that we haven't even heard yet. So thank you so much, and enjoy your time that you get to have with your family. And
we'll do it again maybe at the beginning of the next season.
Can't wait.
Sounds good.
Have a good one.
Thanks. You too. Take care.
Cheers.